You are now entering Voice This. Beware. This podcast contains facts that some listeners may find inspiring and uplifting. Listener's discretion advised.
Welcome back to another episode of Voice This. I'm your host, Milani J. Singham. I hope you guys didn't miss us too much. It's definitely been a minute, but we're back and back on track as we journey through the development lifecycle. We've already gone through research, concept generation, prototyping, and today we'll be covering continuous validation. Our guest is the tenacious Faria Mustafa, who at the time of recording this episode was a group product manager at Winterlight Labs. In this episode, she sheds some light on the day-to-day of product management, like monitoring product metrics and learning from your target market, and also shares with us some key takeaways about working in the digital healthcare space. There is a lot to learn in this one. In particular, I would say my favorite insight is probably the last one, which means you should listen to the very end. All right, let's get to it. Welcome, Faria, to the podcast of Voice This.
Great to be here. Excited to chat with you about validation, one of my favorite topics.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do in terms of your day-to-day and kind of get us started from there.
Sure. So I am the group product manager at Winterlight Labs. And so I'm just going to say up front, I'm not a designer. I am a product manager. So when it comes to validation, I'm really talking about the market. I'm talking about talking to users, trying to understand their pain points, monitoring product metrics, both for development and also for adoption, especially if we go into new markets. And right now I'm doing a bit of both. And the other piece is product strategy, what to build, what to improve, what not to build. And yeah, so that's pretty much day to day. And the other thing that I do that's probably not necessarily strictly related to product management is just I'm involved in optimizing processes at Winterlight. So, you know, that involves developing a product development and roadmap strategy, but also setting up ways we manage sprints, et cetera, how we make decisions quickly as needs are changing, as we're talking to new customer segments. So that's pretty much day-to-day, month-to-month.
Oh, geez. And I love how you said quickly with like that, you enunciate quickly or like quickly, we need to, you know, awesome. So you covered about how you got a career in here as well. So you kind of combined your education and your passion. What would you say your favorite app or use case would be in the space that you're in? So in digital health.
Oh, in digital health. So I don't want to be biased and talk about. it's more the use cases. When you talk about digital health, you're thinking about natural language processing. You're thinking about VR and a whole bunch of technology that can help improve the quality of care, help us detect issues earlier. What I really like is that language is such a rich source of information, and you can so passively, but non-intrusively monitor someone to figure out what could be wrong. Like that's one of my favorite work on it. But really, like if I'm speaking broadly, it helps you provide a holistic care, both in terms of understanding like how this patient or this person is day to day, what works for them, what doesn't, from a physician or like a clinician's perspective. But also it helps when someone takes medications or like it's not working, you don't know why it's not working. But this type of data can help you do that. And it's just not voice data, it's really all types of data. So I see a lot of cool possibilities of not just finding out what's wrong earlier, but potentially preventing things, right? Like this goes to even depression, which is a big thing like now in the COVID period. So it's just like very cool. Sure. I don't know that there's one app. What would be amazing would be sort of like a suite of multimodal remote monitoring tools that you could use for someone who needs. So I'm not saying use it on everyone. Like I don't want 10 tools monitoring me right now, but someone who's at risk of something, someone who's older, they could benefit from it. And they could like access care quicker too, like through texting, talking to their care team. Like one thing I noticed, you know, when working with seniors was particularly people in their 50s to like early 70s, and they're not even seniors, honestly, but like older adults, and they're interested in using voice to text. Like I would like text like this with my fingers, but they'd be like, hi, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, cool. And it never occurred to me, but it's a very... So, but one of the things that we could do better, and I only bring this up is because as people get older, their vocal properties change. So the speech to text ASR or artificial capabilities are not good enough. Like they're more targeted towards people who are younger and maybe have less accents or have a particular demographic. So the flip of it is what Winterlight does. We are very good at assessing older adults because that's where we started building our technology. Our speech recognition there is probably better than what you find in average. That's something to improve. But among the robotic voice that, you know, I think you want the experience to be more human, but not too human.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah. No, I agree. Not too robotic, but at the same time, it's a perfect middle between robotic and like too personal. So.
Yeah. It's basically in the context of you want the bot, whatever it is, to be relatable as you're talking to it. And you want to feel like, to an extent, you're having a conversation, but obviously you don't want the bot to prompt you. I think that would be a bit much, so yeah.
No, that's so funny. Okay, that's pretty interesting. That's cool. I love how we talked about your favorite application or use case. Now let's get to the core topic of our episode. So today we'll be talking about continuous validation. And so let's start off with defining it. So how would you define continuous validation? Your favorite topic.
I think continuous validation is just a practice that you must, in my opinion, and I'm sure there are others.
And mine, don't worry.
it's a practice that you do if you're trying to build products and improve them, for sure, like hands down. But, you know, in more technical terms, it's a practice that assumes that you are trying to build and improve on a product in a shape-shifting market. So users' needs are always changing. And you're trying to learn what their pain points are, and you're trying to solve for them, and you're trying to make the whole experience better, whether it's in one particular target market or a new market. And, you know, needs will change even in a particular market as new capabilities develop, whether it's technology, whether, you know, it's just preferences or group habits that develop in a certain demographic. It's just important no matter what products you're building. Especially if it's technology-based.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with you 100%. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your experiences with continuous validation? You kind of mentioned why it's important, and how do you do it on your end?
Right. Now, this is not one-size-fits-all, but I approach this as first off with validating a market. When I joined Winterlight, we were trying to figure out what our beachhead market was. We had this core technology that is like, it'll take your speech, it'll analyze your voice and language and spit out, you know, information that's relevant to like how your brain health is, how your mood is, for example. Now, you can do a lot with it. When someone says healthcare, like it's all encompassing, well, what part of healthcare can you help, right? Our founders knew that, you know, they wanted it to be health related. But then when I went in, we tested out a few markets. Like, so the idea is to just talk to people who might use the product in different cases. So it's your hypothesis that someone will be using this capability to somehow improve healthcare for a group of patients. So that was the very broad hypothesis. So a lot of people thought this was cool, right? Because it's a new technology. A lot of people were interested in talking to me and anyone else involved in this about how this could be used. But who is willing to use it? Very different. Who's willing to pay for it? Very, very different questions, right? The market validation piece is just target a set of hypotheses that you have and you try to prove. The very first piece is you target a group that might use it. You talk to them and see how they approach a particular, I wouldn't even call it user journey at this point, but just like how they approach the care of this particular patient group. You learn what some of the hiccups are. So in this case, it would be, oh, we do assessments on people, like cognitive assessments, but they're not sensitive because if you do them repeatedly, people learn if they're being asked the same question. It's laborious. You ask someone to subtract 7 from 100. I'm sure a lot of people are going to screw up on that one. Those are not enjoyable. And you need like a very well-trained person to administer it. So coming off that hypothesis, you test how could the core technology help. And then who are the stakeholders? Because in healthcare, you have a lot of things. The person buying the product is not the person using the product. So, you know, you have the physician or equivalent researcher, and you have the buyer. This could be an institution like a pharmaceutical company or a healthcare company. And then the frontline workers are using it along with the patients. So very complicated environment. So you have to interview each group of stakeholders. So the first idea is like at each level, people think that this is worth doing. this is worth trying, your product is worth trialing, and it's worth paying for it. So there's usability, there's interest, but there's business viability. Otherwise, you cannot have it or build it or sell it. So that's what we did in the first bit. And then there's continuous validation in terms of, okay, this is the MVP, because now having talked to customers, you prove out a market, you build an MVP that people like, at the very least, if not love, and then you start working with them to iterate. You know, what other features do you want? What is bad? What do you want to remove? And at some point, especially in healthcare, it takes a long time, you build a scalable product for one market. And then, of course, you can branch onto your next end customers, the other markets, and you repeat, do the same.
Wow. How do you choose the market that you want to build?
So you want to look at the maturity, right? So for example, in our case, it's so heavy on research, both in the clinical research and machine learning research front, which means that there will be a long phase where you're building the technology, working with researchers. Like, you can spin it off to be a consumer product, but of course in healthcare, that's always a bit challenging. But do you make it more user-facing? In our case, it didn't make sense to do that earlier on. Now we are, of course, branching into other capabilities. So if you do sort of a research study, right, to prove out that your speech assessment is as good as something you do pen and paper that a doctor would use, let's just say, you could do that with healthcare teams like retirement homes, et cetera. But at that point, they'll treat it like research. And it's like, this is something I learned, like when you get your hands dirty, you learn. It's just, they loved the idea. I know that you probably might be interested, so I'm just going to jump ahead and talk about it.
Oh, yeah.
Basically, this is a time when a hypothesis was invalidated in our case. So we had lots of hypotheses. One hypothesis was that retirement homes, they're mandated, depending on the state or province, the US versus Canada, they're mandated to do cognitive assessments on some biennial or quarterly basis. Would they use our technology because it's faster, it's on an iPad, it doesn't have those difficult tests. It's like you're describing a picture, quite fun. It wasn't really built to be used by seniors at the time because we were developing the core of what can this do? What can it analyze? So at that stage, actually, we couldn't be at a stage where we were having an MVP for seniors. We tried it. They loved the test. But there were two things that sort of we weren't there yet. One was it didn't fit into their operational model of how do I take care of a person by doing this assessment at the time, because we were also working with life sciences companies like Johnson & Johnson. They had a very different requirement. So what we learned is that whereas in the pharma use case, they want to do research to find out what's wrong with this particular patient, they also want to do this in senior care. However, the senior doesn't want to know if they have cognitive impairment. Right? Some of them are very proactive and they want to know. But think about it, like these retirement homes, are people who are 84 plus for the most part. They're like, you know what? I don't need to know this and terrify myself. They might want to know, okay, if something's wrong, what could you improve to prevent me? For example, cognitive impairment, it plays a big role in a lot of bad stuff that happens. You miss medications, you're more likely to fall, more likely to be hospitalized, losing like your independent abilities. If we're able to pick up something earlier and we're able to say, oh, like this is something new that I'm working on right now, so I don't want to go too deep into it. But the idea is, so what we learned from that experience earlier on was that we really need to prove out one market first and build that use case and develop our technology in that domain. So what we did ended up doing was we worked with, we have been and we still are, the pharma is our beachhead market, working with them to build something that could be used scalably in the context of research studies or other types of studies. And we work with academics and physicians who are interested in doing research as well. But now we're at a stage where we can say, okay, we understand what the needs of the senior care market are. It's a very different presentation of results, very much about the empathy, because in research, you're not necessarily showing the results to the participants in a way that you would in a real world scenario. So how does it serve the senior? How does it serve their family who are anxious to see how they're doing? Very, very different domains. Right now, I'm working on that. But that concept was invalidated earlier on when we tried to enter both markets with sort of the same core understanding.
Wow, that is very interesting. What would you think would have happened if you guys didn't validate yourself? You guys didn't go out in the market as early as you did because you've tested both out and you kind of saw where you guys sat. But say if you did it later, what would have happened?
I honestly think, in retrospect, personally, and listened to and read a lot from product leaders, I do think it would have been ideal to start with one market only, but it's hard to know, right? So we did gain from doing this research, we did gain insights from the technical development piece, the research piece, which is quite valuable, frankly. But I think one thing that I think everyone struggles with when they're trying to do something new, certainly in my case, I felt that way. I thought, oh, like, well, what would be the harm in trying both? And I'm sure so did some of my colleagues. But I think if you focus on one target market, whatever your hypothesis. So even if, let's say, we focus on pharma and you said, let's see if this works, your feedback loop could be a bit faster. You could devote a lot of your attention on that one particular market. So you either prove it right or wrong, I think, in a more focused manner, and probably you would have more opportunity to scale quicker, as opposed to if you have one established market and you're trying a new market, which is what we're doing now, that's a different story. So even if we tried senior care first, and there would have been opportunity to build there, make a product that's more senior care facing if we just tried senior care as well. But then our attitude towards the product needed to be very different, because when you're trying to understand how your technology applies to something that you think is worth testing, you kind of are living that whole experience, and you should, because if you're not, then you're not continuously thinking about all the users and all the stakeholders and giving it your like 120%. If we did that, we may have found that, oh, we need some more simpler results and we want to be more UI, UX facing, because probably an app, or maybe oriented towards providing less complicated results for a particular, like very simple for the seniors and their family, a little more complicated for the doctors. I think it would just be like a different company doing different things.
Yeah. You guys might have pivoted, like, that's very interesting. I just want to know, how long did it take to validate and go through that entire process the first time around and later on?
So the validation cycle varies vastly depending on the market you're in. If you're doing B2B, again, this is a heuristic, it doesn't apply to everyone. In a B2B, you probably want around 6 reference customers. When I say reference customers, it's just someone who would be like a huge fan of your product, or at least a fan, and who are going to be using your product, integrating it into their daily workflow, like in a B2B model. So if there are about 6 of them, then you've got product market fit. That is a higher level of validation. However, you could have a phase of market validation where you're just testing and learning that people are willing to buy this. And at that phase, you haven't built anything, right? Like, hopefully you haven't built anything because that's not a great idea. So, and then with your MVP, you have 6 reference customers. That's the idea. Mm-hmm. So that, all of that together, for something that's so science oriented and pharma, it has a lot of stuff, like a lot of stakeholders, long sales cycle. With all of that, I would say it took, to get to the proper level of product market fit, it took us a couple of years to do that well. But that's because digital health is a very difficult market. And if you're working in a research-oriented environment, it's just going to take longer. You need more data and you need more time to get more data. And that's just it. But maybe it could be done faster if with the strategies we've learned now. The other heuristic is that how much time it takes to validate is like potentially twice your sales cycle. For example, if you think the sales cycle potentially for selling to a particular target customer is 6 months. Again, I'm talking about a B2B model. Obviously, consumer products are different. Then you probably need 12 months to validate it properly.
Okay, cool. Is that considered quick in terms of the healthcare space, doing it within a year? Or
I think yes, because there are lots of regulations involved too. It isn't just healthcare is a very carefully regulated space, and rightfully so. Maybe sometimes a little too regulated, but there's barriers to accessing the type of data you want, like healthcare data, because you have to be compliant with certain regulations, legislations, different areas. Then is your, whatever you're using, is it scientifically validated? Meaning, how is it affecting the clinical outcome of a population that you're trying to improve care for or find something about? So that's just research, and that takes time. Now we're trying the senior care market. Well, I am, my new very exciting project that obviously because of COVID, it's been difficult. We couldn't do much last year, but the idea is first of all, you want to see like how this could be incorporated in their workflow, let's say retirement homes. And we're doing that. And so once we have tested that out, which we are doing already, then we'll say, okay, we'll build an MVP and see maybe hundreds of people in some of the communities will be using this for a couple of months. Mm-hmm. We'll see how that affects their quality of care. By using this, is the doctor better able to pick up things that are going wrong? What are they recommending? And whatever they're recommending, it could be as simple as this person's feeling a little bit down, encourage them to more social activities, inform their family to come and visit. Or it could be, you're showing some side effects of medication here. I'll adjust your medication. Like, this is what the doctor does. It could be the doctor's like, oh, wow. Like, I'll do a full assessment on you and see if there is a diagnosis. So all these different steps. And we'll see what helps, right? And then you've said, okay, like, now we have, like, very concrete proof that lots of people are using it and it's actually very useful. So it's way different than, do people love this app?
<It's> not, even if they do, like. Yeah. That's interesting. I want to like really go into it, like kind of like a deep dive in terms of continuing validation. So is there some sort of like framework or techniques that you use or something that people use when it comes to validating products or features, whatever it may be?
Great, great question. I think so when you're trying to figure out a target market, whether you're entering a new market, it's the first market, you want to have customer interviews, but not with any prototype, right? Because you're just trying to understand. If you have a hypothesis, like this hospital is going to use your technology to figure out which of its patients, let's say older adults, are at risk of various bad outcomes, right? This is your hypothesis. So you go in and you don't want to prime them because people are super polite. And that is both a good and a bad thing. So you want to go in and just be like, oh, so what do you do in this environment? Like I'm using the doctor example, but really it applies to anything. So whatever target customer you have, you want to talk to a group of them, depending on whether it's B2B or B2C. If it's B2C, you want 50 or more people probably. B2B, you want some amount of number of organizations. And you talk to people, then you ask them what they do in their day-to-day life. Like today, how do they take care of this patient population? Is there anything that could be improved? What is it? Like you keep it very open-ended. And let them say whatever. Do not prime them. It's a very important thing to keep in mind. Don't be opinionated. You're really there to learn and understand them and their problems and take notes. And then, of course, building that relationship so that you can reach out to them if and when you do build something once you have validated at a first pass. That's the first step. Then, you know, when you are building something, of course, there are prototypes that you work with and there are different types of testing you do. So I'm going to start with the prototype piece, but basically you could, again, I'm no designer, but like a broad stroke. So low fidelity prototypes, I think, should just be used internally. Like when you're trying to brainstorm with your dev team and your designers, that's when you're using that just to like figure out what it is and to conceptualize a solution. But the moment someone starts writing code, that becomes expensive, right? From an organizational perspective, both in terms of time and money. So when you do invest that time, let's say to do some sort of demo, that is, I would say, a high fidelity prototype. And you would use that. So it could be like you had some mockups on Figma and you connected to the app and you asked someone to like just use the flow. So that's the stage. I'm sure you as researchers know more about this than I do, but you sort of hand someone a demo to work with this user and you observe them because the biggest learning is in what they're doing. Because there's always this main action you want them to take. Are they taking it? Mm-hmm. How fast are they getting to it? What are their struggles? That's what you're screening for in the first pass of a high fidelity prototype. Then you have hybrid prototypes too, right? Where you are manually telling them if you answer this question, you get a score. And you have some developer, or maybe it's the product manager, like inputting something and giving them a score. So that's your hybrid. You do all that stuff. When it gets more mature, of course, you also then validate it at that stage. Then you want users to actually use it. So all the stuff I talked about before involved an aspect of usability testing. But you want to go deeper. And this is where maybe an MVP is helpful. Certainly a lot of tracking of product metrics and how they're using it is crucial at that point. But you maybe hand whatever the solution is to like 10 users and say, hey, this is an MVP. It's like, but I want to see like how you use it in a B2B case, for example, in your workflow. what mm-hmm. you learn, and this is something, you know, even I've read elsewhere, you learn a lot from when a user misbehaves, like they do something that you did not predict they would do, because it can tell you, oh, there's like a feature that they want, but I could never think about it. Now, that's one way of getting at it, right? You're just using sort of their insights, but not tracking them down, asking them a whole suite of questions, but just seeing the natural environment, how do they interact with it? What do they want of it? And that is super valuable. At that stage, you want all of your product team to be knowing about this. You're the product manager, of course, but the designer, the developer, anybody else is involved, because each team, each element of that product team has a very different perspective on what that means and how that can be like enhanced or improved. And so, you know, you could in some cases also pretend to be your customer for a day and do their work, but that won't work in a healthcare setting, clearly. So yeah, so there are many ways to get about it. And then you do feasibility testing, which is, again, internal. You do that with your dev team. They're like, this thing that you've thought of, like we've thought of as a team, this is technically possible, but you do that internally.
Do you think so? These sound like pretty scalable frameworks that can be taken, not even just conversational AI, but to other products as well. Yeah. Web app, we've used it as well. So what would be different in terms of products versus conversational products in relation to validating? Or is there a difference?
There certainly is a difference. Weirdly, a lot of things are similar, because in all cases, you're trying to understand, is this usable? Is this a viable thing to build? Will a lot of people use it? How does it make the customers feel? Like in those aspects, and not just that, but also, you know, as you're using a mature product, how users want it to change, if they do or what they don't like. So all of that is similar. But I think conversational AI is different, because you are technically interacting with the product at a deeper level. And almost you're interacting with, I wouldn't say a person, but kind of a person, depending on the use case. So it's very different. I think one thing that you want to avoid probably, and this will really depend on the demographic and the nature of the person, you don't want the conversational AI to be intrusive. Like, you know, you want your privacy to be intact. So you don't want to be worried about, is this listening to me? Is it going to just start talking to me? Also, it's not just voice-based, even in a text case. Like, you know, when you go into a website and there's just like bot talking, you're like, I don't, why? So, you know, I mean, these aspects, you want to be helpful. You want the user to have everything they might want or need in their tooltips, but you don't want to impose the technology on them. And I think that's something that I don't think, because I haven't worked with web-based, but I would think that that's not a problem or a constraint you have to think of in those other scenarios.
Yeah, no, I agree. I feel like for more web and app, we're more looking at usability, but I guess for conversational, there's like that one other step. So I know most of our listeners who are listening to this podcast are fairly new into conversational AI, and I think you did a really good job of like explaining about validation. So for those that want to learn more about techniques, it sort of sounds like usability. So those that are in UX can kind of bring in those skills as well. But for someone that's really fresh into this environment, this space, and this industry, what would you recommend in terms of learning about the techniques, practicing them, understanding, and being able to bring that to a workspace or project or whatever they're working on?
There are definitely lots of amazing books out there. There are communities you can join, all that. So some of my favorite books, and I think this is, to me, is a must read if you are going to quickly validate something, it's just Lean Startup by Eric Ries. Mm-hmm. It's just something to read no matter whether you're a designer, a developer, a product manager, CEO. So that's just something to read. There are many other books I could recommend, but to be brief, the other one as a product person you would read, I know it's helpful for product managers, but may help designers too, is Inspired by Marty Kagan. He's one of my favorite product leaders. Eric Ries in Lean Startup, he talks about how to validate a market quickly, effectively, in an economic manner, move fast and break things. But that's what he focuses on. However, Marty Kagan in Inspired, he focuses on what techniques you could use as a product manager. How do you collaborate with your designers and developers? What things to keep in mind about yourself, your users, and generally the organization when you want to make it a product-driven organization? That is a filter both to understand what you want to learn, but most importantly, what mindset do you want to have? It's more like lots of things people can learn. And, you know, that learning is a like lifelong thing. But do you have the right mindset to accept the right kinds of risks or thrills, however you want to call them? And that's very important.
Yeah.
Not everyone is a good fit for different profession. Like, you have your niche. If you're starting out, you read that and you get a feel for, oh, this is the kind of person I am or I want to become. It's a lifestyle. It's not just, you know,
yeah,
I did a 9-to-5 job, and certainly that's not the case if you're a startup, and even if you're a product manager anywhere, really.
Yeah.
There are many different product communities. There are podcasts, there are webinars. I would say that, you know, Mixpanel is good for that. There are lots of others out there too, doing webinars with product leaders, product school, etc. What I'm going to say is there's no substitute, as with developing software, there is no substitute for doing the work, literally no substitute. You can read everything you're reading here is probably generic, right? Maybe like 20% will apply to the field. So the broad principles will apply anywhere. However, what is it that works for your users and for your market is something you can only learn when you get your hands dirty. And it doesn't have to be necessarily in a way that you're a product manager of a company and that's how you are developing the skill. Maybe you are in a different role in this company. Maybe you're starting off helping out in customer support. You're helping out with user research. Or if you're someone not working at a company, but you have dev skills, maybe you just built something and you, there are many ways to get to this, but nothing will substitute that visceral experience of experiencing when you are failing and also when you're succeeding, but you learn more when you're failing, absolutely.
Well said. Well said. I feel like I'm so glad you not only mentioned some techniques or recommendations for books and podcasts, but I'm glad you kind of finished up with that fact, because it's true. Like, without practice, without actually getting your hands dirty, there's no way to even know if those methods or techniques work for you, right? Because it could work elsewhere, but does it work in your position, your industry? That's a really, really good point. That's such a great fact. I'm glad, like, regardless of all the things that you've mentioned, I feel like the one of the few things that people should walk away with in this podcast is that fact. So I'm glad you mentioned it. And I feel like that can just apply not only with the products that you use, but in just life in general. Like, you know what I mean? Just take it in and take it with you. Yeah, so I love it. Awesome. Well, thank you. Thank you. So we're actually kind of wrapping up now. I loved our podcast. I love the content that you brought forward. I felt like you gave us a deep dive or even deeper dive into continuous validation and really explaining what it is, how you did it in your experience, as well as recommending in terms of what people would do when they're coming into the industry when they're brand new. So in terms of the podcast, the way we end off is we have a segment called Create Your Own World with Conversational AI. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you an invisible magic wand. And what you're going to tell me is, what part of your day would you automate and not automate? So what part of your day where you're like, I wish that this can just be automated and my life would be so much easier. Conversational AI would just, you know, make things better. And what parts where you're like, I'll leave it as is. So what would you say the two are for you?
Yeah. Wow. What could you automate? So many things, I think. Well, to an extent, right? This will depend on the stage of your life, I guess. For me right now, I would love it if conversational AI would just automatically schedule things for me. Chores, it'll know, like I'll scream out like, hey, I probably want to have lunch at noon and or like sometime soon, just figure out when I need to warm my food. Just message me, like remind me. I don't have to write reminders, block my time in the calendar between my 8 meetings to do this. It'll both schedule meetings. I'll write an email. And if the email says someone confirms they're free for a time, it'll automatically schedule it for me. I would love that. And it would take the time. From it. It would schedule doctor's appointments, banking appointments, etc. Like, I would just want an integrated approach there. Where I see, I think it could help a lot of people, and it does already with some of the tools and platforms out there, is, you know, it can enhance the way you look at information. Like, if you're I would want a world where I want to buy something, whether it's a laptop or whatever it is. I want to know like what would work for me and my habits. And I want to just like speak conversationally and say, these are my preferences. It's like Star Trek, and they'll give me recommendations based on my preferences. I don't have to search anything. Like, that would be perfect.
I want that right now. Like, I want it right now in my hands. I can already think of so many things I can just research and just order. I wouldn't even, like, think twice. I'll just buy now, and it'll just come to me. Oh, that is – oh, I'm so tempted.
Yeah, it would be amazing. Like, this does remind me of Star Trek, you know, because, like, you'd see, like, Captain talking and something, you know, food appears. I'm like, yes, I'm great. I think I need it.
Oh, that would really help with food. That would really help with food. Oh, yes. That's a good point, too.
Especially if you're like back-to-back meetings and you know that you've got the 15 minutes. Like, do I go downstairs and warm my food or disappear? But those are the things. But that said, speaking of that, I like cooking. I don't want to automate that away.
That's good.
But one thing that I find irritating, even now, is when I'm writing email and the NLP bot like recommends what I'm going to write, I find that very intrusive. How do you know that I'm going to write? I understand it's trying to train. It's like, don't interrupt my thoughts with your subformed thoughts.
It's so true. I feel like the moment you type let me and it'll just say, let me know what you think. I'm like, I'm not trying to like, I'm not trying to think like I just want to say what I want to say. I totally agree with you. But sometimes I feel like it like comes in at the right time when you're super lazy and you're like, let me. Yep, that's a sentence. Yeah. Okay. And next, like it's good for that aspect, but you're right. Like when you're in the flow of typing something, like don't interrupt. But yeah, no, that's awesome. I love this segment because like the ideas that come up are so good that I want it right this instant. Like now I can't stop thinking about food, but there's never really a time where I don't stop. But I love the automation fact for scheduling. I think that is definitely something that could happen, right? Like it sounds pretty realistic as you're typing an email. So that's really cool. Looking forward. Hopefully by the time, you know, we like catch up or something, you'll be like, oh, guess what I'm using now? Remember that thing that we talked about, create your own world? Look at that. So hopefully there'll be a time where we can talk about it. But it's been great.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Hopefully in the near future for sure. But I think today has been such a great conversation with you. I think this is really amazing for the listeners trying to, even if they weren't sure of concept validation, if they've never heard it before, now they're probably pros. And that's thanks to you.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I'm just, you know, glad to be here today. Love the questions you asked, especially the ones that came up as you were chatting. The way I see this is just, you know, we're just chatting. And if any information I share is helpful, like, I'll be very glad. But it's almost like having a coffee break with them. This is how I perceive it. So I hope there's something to be gleaned from these experiences, failures, and successes. But just really glad to be here and to chat with you.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Thanks. Bye.
Hi, everyone. Congratulations. You have completed listening to the continuous validation episode of the Voiceless podcast. You are so, so, so close to the end of the development lifecycle of building voice products. Our guest, Faria, was actually our first guest from the healthcare space, and coming in as a product manager brought us a very different perspective and a very interesting one as well. So it's always great to actually talk to passionate individuals, and you can probably hear it in her voice as well. And on top of that, we were talking about our favorite topics, so obviously that is a recipe for a great conversation. Hopefully you guys enjoyed learning more about voice and how to create great products. If you like what you've heard, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast player and be notified for new episodes. Don't forget to check out the show notes, and to stay up to date with the Voice This podcast, be sure to follow us on all the socials @VoiceThisPod. This is Milani, and you've been listening to Voice This.